Good afternoon. Call to order the House Committee on Environment and Water. It is Tuesday, April 14th. Welcome. We have another ambitious agenda, members and audience, so we'll be using the timer, moving people along. I'll try to be as clear as possible about the amount of time that we'll be spending per witness and per bill. The way it's looking to me now is that we have a number of folks interested in testifying on 3199, including several legislators. We're going to start with that. We'll probably spend the majority, not perhaps the more than an hour, but maybe 30 to 45 minutes on 3199 before moving on to the other five bills on our agenda. So open a public hearing on House Bill 3199 and ask our legislators who are here to testify on that proposal to join us and tell us why we should support the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. Sal Esquivel, for the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. Why should you support the bill? It's a good bill. This bill, 3199, brings some ability for us to do more with our local governments and government buildings and bring them up to an efficiency level to where they'll save monies through insulation projects, through retrofits, through anything that'll make it more energy efficient. The benefits are pretty straightforward. It creates jobs. The Department of Energy estimates that about 1,800 jobs will be created with the help of the stimulus dollars that we have from this. Saves energy. Combines projects. Could reduce Oregon's energy use by as much as 600,000 MMBTUs. Saves money. Could save taxpayers about $10.2 million a year just in reduced cost on energy efficiency. And the Small Energy Loan Program has been a model-leaning effort since 1980. Lending effort. What it does, it allows municipalities to purchase and borrow money through a bonding system that they can pay back in the long run, but they can save with their energy efficiency as much or more on the project itself. To date, no public borrower has ever defaulted on a loan. I repeat, to date, no public borrower has ever defaulted on a loan on this program. In many cases, this project saves enough energy to pay for themselves with just the first couple of years itself. The Department of Energy estimates that more than $200 million worth of these projects exist today. We also know local governments want to finance these projects right away, and since many have already submitted millions of dollars worth of stimulus requests, the Department of Energy is confident that this program can use all $50 million of the request bonding authority in this biennium. This money will not only finance energy-efficient projects and create jobs, but will help Oregon leverage a larger share of the stimulus package from the federal government. This is just a very simple bill. It allows us to pick and choose and allows us to have the ability of more flexibility to pull monies, bond monies, and get a matching fund from the federal stimulus dollars that are coming to this state.
Great. Thank you. Representative Kennedy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak. And I also want to give a special thanks to Representative Jefferson Smith for inviting me to testify and for sponsoring this bill. I'm Bill Kennemer from the Oregon City Canby area and was for the last 12 years Clackamas County Commissioner. And one of the things that was interesting about Clackamas County is when I went there, I found that we were scattered all about the county in an interesting way. And we ultimately did, 12 years ago, we did an audit and discovered we had 129 functions in 78 locations on 8 incompatible computer systems. Not exactly the way to run an operation. And another thing I discovered is that most of our buildings were ramshackle cheap places because we were filling in, trying to make ends meet in a very simple way. But it was making us extraordinarily inefficient and was actually contributing also to a lot of absenteeism. And we started a program for consolidation, and about 5 years ago we built our first LEED certified building, about an 80,000 square foot facility for $28 million. LEED certified is a level of energy efficiency. It saves about $600,000 annually on the utilities. You know, that starts making your payment a little more reasonable. But I guess another part of it is, you know, as we're starting to talk about being green, it's about walking your talk. And we were able to show that you could do the right thing and actually save money at the same time and have a facility that you're proud of. And it was really interesting to me that our efficiency began to increase dramatically because we were putting people together and they work better as groups, but also morale is better in a nice facility. And to my wonderful surprise, I also found that the community liked having a nice facility and they thought green was cool, to use an old guy's term. And they really have gotten behind us, and I think it's made a real difference in our community. Since then, we've added another 125,000 square foot building and more on the plans for a campus. I think it's worked. This is, in the scheme of things, not a lot of money, but I think it helps send the right message and will help other jurisdictions do the right things. I think it's the right thing to model for our constituents throughout the state and will pay big dividends in the long run. And I thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. I've spent time up at the Clackamas County Complex, and it's gorgeous facilities.
Isn't it lovely?
Understand the morale boost that employees working there must get.
It's been fun, you know, and also we did some other neat things, you know, art in public places. And we have some art galleries where local artists rotate their materials through, and a water fountain, and some things that make it a very special place and a place of identity as well as function.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
If there are any questions for these gentlemen, seeing none. Representative Smith, do you want to testify now or later? Okay. Let's move on to Mike Graney. I saw him earlier. Is he still here? Yes, Mike. Let's also have up Jeff Bissonette, Brian Cree.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. We also support House Bill 3199, and I won't repeat the points that...
Let me interrupt you quickly. I'm going to start the timer now, start timing folks at about 2 minutes. So we're going to be pretty strict about this. We have an ambitious agenda. I know some folks have traveled to be here. I think the committee is very interested in this bill, but we are going to move forward quickly. Okay. So thank you, Mr. Greene. Go ahead.
Great. And I will be very brief. There's a summary sheet of the benefits of the bill. It does save energy, but more importantly also saves taxpayer dollars. Will help create jobs. And I think what's particularly important that this bill will complement other important energy efficiency legislation that you're working on. In particular, House Bill 2626, this is a very important bill, largely focuses on the residential and commercial sector, although it could deal with the public sector as well. But this bill, by targeting the public sector exclusively, I think is a natural complement to that legislation. We have the with HB 3199 increasing our limitation for our bond program, there's definitely the need. We've identified over $200 million of projects ready to go in the public sector. We know there's hundreds of millions of dollars worth more of projects on state and local governments, higher education, and community colleges. This bill helps address an important need, and we support the legislation.
Thank you very much.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. I'm also here today to support 3199. In addition to the current legislative efforts that Mr. Graney just talked about, I think it's also important to note that this builds on past legislative efforts that are currently underway. From last session, the February session of 2008, passed a bill requiring energy usage reduction in state buildings. The regular session before that passed a bill to require 1.5% for solar on public buildings, and even going as far back as the establishment of the public purpose charge, directing a certain amount of energy efficiency money for schools. This, I think, builds on all of that, and it also takes advantage of another bill that was passed back in 2003 for energy savings performance contracting, and making sure that savings from an energy project actually help pay for that project. And so you are building on a very solid foundation, and because of that, this is a very good bill, and we heartily support it. If there is other work to be done, we're happy to be part of the conversation, but we commend the committee for taking it up and urge passage of House Bill 3199. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Edwards, can you hang on for just one more piece of testimony before we bring you up?
No problem.
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, Brian Krieg, representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association, the Sheet Metal Workers of Local 16, and the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association of Oregon. All told, that's about 260 contractors and about 5,000 people in the construction industry who work for them. We're very supportive of this bill. It does build, as has been noted, on many different things that you've laid the foundations for. The construction industry is absolutely reeling in the state at the moment. We don't have a lot of projects out there in the long term. This is the type of work that can get done very quickly, and we can get back on track. And it also, the great thing about it is it satisfies quite a few other policy needs we have in the state, carbon reduction and other things. By making our public buildings more efficient, one of the other things is that it just does prove, once again, that Oregon is a leader in the green movement. It's the right kind of place that you're going to want to come and bring your businesses to. So we'd like to say that we support the bill. We have a trained workforce that's ready to go. We have training centers that if we need more people to be trained up, we're ready to go with that also. Most of our contractors are LEED certified already, not just our industry, many of the others, the electricians, plumbers, et cetera. So please, we urge your support.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Greeney, what's the relationship between this proposal and potential federal stimulus dollars? Can you speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, this funding, which does have to be repaid because we use general obligation bonds, would generally be a loan. Potentially, we could, with federal stimulus dollars, do, say, half loan, half grant, or we could buy down the interest rate to a lower rate than we offer, perhaps even as low as zero interest loans. So there's a combination of things we could do depending upon how much federal stimulus dollars we could leverage with this.
Okay, and is it your expectation that by adopting this policy, we would in fact be a recipient of federal stimulus dollars that might not otherwise come into this state? Are we looking at that kind of arrangement, or do we not know enough to say?
I think we don't know enough for sure, but I think it would put us at an advantage because some of the federal stimulus money will be competitive between states, both for energy efficiency and renewable energy. We don't have details yet on what requirements there will be from the federal government.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for, I think, Director Graney, but in making, because we have limited amounts of bonding dollars available, how would we decide or how would this committee know if the investment of the money in energy-saving devices is a better investment than, let's say, investments in bonding for transportation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benz, my understanding on, I know there's an overall limitation on state bonding, you do have separate categories, and the 11J bonds, which is the article in the Constitution that authorizes our program, were well under the constitutional limit with this bill and other legislation, such as House Bill 2626. We have had discussions with the Treasurer's Office, and they have been comfortable in supporting this legislation and 2626 in terms of being bonds that the state has the market for and would not hurt the overall effectiveness of the state's bonding. And part of that, I think, is because these are general obligation bonds as opposed to some of the other bonds that the state issues.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow.
Thank you. The I think the limitation, according to the impact explanation, right now is $1.126 billion. And this would amount to $50 million of that, $1.26 billion. So I hope we wouldn't get up against that, given what our activities might be. But if they did, how would those debates be carried out, as you understand it, the choice being between something other than this?
Right.
What would you look to figure out which is the best investment for the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benz, I think ultimately that would probably have to be decided by the Ways and Means Committee that is the ultimate arbiter of judgments on bonds. And I think they would have to evaluate the different benefits of the programs. In our case, there is energy efficiency and taxpayer savings as well as job creation. But certainly there's benefits to the other programs as well, and I recognize that's sometimes not an easy choice to make.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. I appreciate it. Representative Edwards?
Chair Cannon, committee members, for the record, my name is David Edwards. I'm the state representative from House District 30, which encompasses Greater Hillsborough, North Plains, and Roy and Verbort in Washington County. Appreciate the opportunity to address you today on House Bill 3199. I'm going to make three quick points and then leave it up to the representative from the Bedrock District to give you the complete overview of the bill. Firstly, this is a jobs bill. This is expected to generate somewhere around 1,800 new jobs for Oregonians with an average wage of $40,000 per year and benefits per job. We anticipate about 1.2 direct jobs for each of $1,000 invested in related projects, and we anticipate another 1,250 additional indirect jobs from renewable energy products for every $100 million invested in the program. Secondly, I want to assure you that local governments make great borrowers and credit risks, so we would not be putting the state's full faith and credit at any risk by embarking on this initiative. And lastly, the efficient buildings that would be generated on the basis of this program would save the state money over time. In fact, annual energy savings is estimated to be the equivalent of 16,592 average Oregon homes. And so with that, I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thanks for being here, Representative Edwards. Any questions? Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Ralph Groner, Ivan Molesky, Henry Kramer. Let's see, Henry. Andrea Salinas, is she?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. We've had two handouts. You may have the first handout that was Oregon Public and Tribal Energy Independence in your file, I hope, but I can tell some haven't, so I re-handed it out. That was done by Department of Energy. I'd just like to, and also I have a letter from Solar World that I was asked to present to you. In support of this particular legislation from the vice president of the company, so you have a copy of that. I also would like to say, reiterate that this bill is fiscally responsible, unlike me, and I therefore am very proud of local government. They've never reneged and always paid back. But I'll approach this, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, a little bit different. When I look at the wonderful work done by Representative Reed and Representative Bailey, and you particular, and here I am schmoozing, Representative Cannon, on all your work that I follow. Oh, and I forgot Representative Gilliam, Representative Boone, Representative Bentz, and some of the other, Representative Smith behind me, the key, one of the primary sponsors. This actually is bigger than I hear being talked about, so let me do it, try it a different way. If you were to combine House Bill 2626, House Bill 2181, 3191, the stimulus package that you passed when we began the session, which hopefully jobs will start coming out of it now, the federal stimulus package, fees to return people to work, like my Construction Contractors Board with 2530 employees, waiting on fees, indeed, IDEQ and most of my agencies. The fact is that I look at a big picture that says we could be putting to work probably 50 to 100,000 people combined, collectively, in all those bills, and that, in my opinion, should be a goal with a 12.1 unemployment. I would move, if I were the head of all government, I'd move the jobs bills now, starting this week, to the front of the line to have hearings in front of you, move them through Ways and Means, and let's get people to work, because we are now second to Michigan, and it's my opinion and others that we're probably going to bypass them. 2 minutes. This is a wonderful bill. It creates more jobs than I've heard, by the way, because your one payment will show you that if you took 4 times 4 and add those numbers, 16,000 jobs, adding the multiplier. Make me all nervous because I love this bill and I love this so much. Let's put people to work,
Groner,
and ask leadership to move these bills to the front of the line, and let's get people to work. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. We'll hold off on questions so we've heard from the other two.
Okay. Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, Ivan Molesky, Conservation Coordinator with the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. It's always a pleasure to testify after my colleague from AFSCME, and I think this is great. I mean, this is a blue-green sort of bill. We're looking at creation of green jobs. We're looking at reductions in carbon emissions and energy efficiency. As we've talked about, this bill is going to help finance energy efficiency retrofits on public buildings, which is going to improve Oregon's position in leveraging federal stimulus dollars. Because we're looking at a focus on public buildings, there are going to be a lot of benefits. There are going to be reduced energy costs for Oregon taxpayers, increased state income tax revenues in terms of the jobs that are going to be created, carbon dioxide reductions that are going to be significant because Oregon's utilities are relatively coal-dependent, and obviously green jobs and energy savings. One of the key points I'd like to make here, though, is that we're looking at benefits across the state. The way this bill is written, we're looking at energy efficiency upgrades in rural Oregon and county buildings, at rural fire departments, at all sorts of municipal buildings, county government, state, and local. So I think that's a real positive. That means that the benefits are going to be distributed statewide. They're not going to necessarily be concentrated in one part of the state over another. So I think that's why you're seeing a bipartisan co-sponsorship and support of this legislation, and that's why we're behind it as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Salinas.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I am the legislative director with the Oregon Environmental Council. OEC supports House Bill 3199. As you know, climate change poses serious threats to our economy and our environment and requires immediate action on not only behalf of individuals, communities, but also the state and local governments around the world. The good news is that right now we have many new innovative ways to shape a brighter future, building a clean energy economy, creating jobs, and saving Oregonians money in the long term. And that's exactly what we believe HB 3199 does. Recent U.S. EPA analysis shows that U.S. building stock is one of the two largest sources of global warming pollution at 31% of the total. In Oregon, that percentage is nearly the same at 30%. In fact, according to the Climate Change Integration Group's final report of 2008, the fastest growing segment of greenhouse gas emissions between 1990 and 2004 was in residential and commercial buildings. Under a business-as-usual scenario, emissions are expected to climb dramatically between now and 2020, with the majority of that growth expected to come from electricity use in buildings and transportation. The Oregon Environmental Council supports HB 3199 program because energy efficiency is the most cost-effective way of addressing climate change, and by implementing measures such as this, we can significantly reduce those emissions over time. Thank you for your consideration of this great bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, let's move on. Thank you all. We're going to hear next from Ann Hines or Emily Ackland, maybe both coming up, Dan Eisenbeis, and Phaedra Booth. Anna, okay. I apologize.
Hi, for the record, I'm Ann Hannes. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. This is a great bill. We appreciate the committee and commend Representative Smith for bringing it forward. It will allow counties to leverage different sources of funding so that they can do maybe more projects or projects for cheaper. That means that in the short run, we're going to have jobs for Oregonians, lower energy usage, and in the long run, this bill means lower operational costs, less carbon emissions, and the opportunity to free up scarce public dollars for programs. AOC supports this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dan.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, Daniel Eisenbeiss, League of Oregon Cities. I will try not to be redundant, but the bottom line is that this bill is a strategic investment that will help create jobs in the near term, reduce cost to taxpayers in the long term, and achieve both cost efficiency and environmental benefits. We often expect the public sector to act as sort of model stewards of the environment, and this is exactly the sort of investment that the state should be making. Thank you for consideration of our comments.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phaedra Booth, and I represent the Oregon Conservation Network, which represents 50 of Oregon's leading environmental groups and their tens of thousands of members. I'm here voicing my support and echoing what's been said before me for HB 3199, the Efficient Oregon Buildings Act. This legislation will anchor federal stimulus dollars here in Oregon, create jobs, save energy, and most importantly, save money. HB 3199 will allow the Oregon Department of Energy to authorize bonds through its Small Energy Loan Program by an additional $50 million, which will effectively position Oregon to receive an estimated $50 to $100 million more in matching federal stimulus funds. With a higher volume available in federal grants, taxpayers' energy costs will be dramatically reduced, as well as a reduction of loan burdens for some public energy projects in addition to other economic benefits. More efficient buildings also means less environmental impact. For example, the energy savings represented in this bill are equivalent to removing over 11,000 cars from the road. Benefits such as these will continue to place Oregon as a leader in the green technology, green jobs, and environmental stewardship movement, and it delivers the much-needed economic advantage needed during these challenging financial times. The Oregon Conservation Network wholeheartedly supports this bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. I have a question. Let me see if there are others from the committee. I'm going to ask our representatives of local government to talk about why, what's so great about the state's loan program. So this would build on our SALT program, and what makes that more attractive than other borrowing possibilities that you have to do this kind of work, or is it more attractive than other?
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, we have in the counties a county courthouse challenge where we're trying to lower energy costs and make them more efficient and lower costs. And sometimes some of those projects are a sizable amount of money that more than what the counties can afford. So what you do is you can package a loan. You can use a loan from this program that might be at zero interest rate or really low, and that's something they can't go and be able to borrow easily on the open market. You can then use that as a match to get federal funds and also maybe the Energy Trust. So it's a program where you really can multiply the effects of this and be able to do things that, especially some of the really small counties that don't have the funding available, can take advantage of.
I would just echo the comment that particularly for smaller jurisdictions, access to financing can be more difficult. This program offers financing at competitive rates at a time when credit is not necessarily readily available.
Would you expect to pay these loans back from the energy efficiency savings that result from this work? Would it require additional sort of general fund support from your county and city coffers?
Chair Cannon, I think often that would be the case, is that you could generate enough savings from this that would be what could be freed up to be able to repay the loans. And then also it may also generate enough money to be able to have efficiencies elsewhere for other programs too.
Again, Daniel Eisenbeiss, League of Oregon Cities. I can't speak to the specific repayment mechanism on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis, but based on the track record of repayment by local governments, I think it's safe to say that cities will be making sure that they can repay these loans or take out capital as needed on a sustainable basis.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
We're going to hear from a few more folks. Joe, he left. I don't know if he's planning to come back. Michael Mason, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. And I'm looking around. Did Henry show up? Nope. So let's, two gentlemen here, and anyone else who's here to testify on 3199, yeah, come on up, bro. In any order.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Army National Guard and Oregon Military Department. We're here to support House Bill 3199, and I was asked by one of the proponents who previously spoke to offer just a little bit of insight to what we do in the Oregon Military Department. Most of you probably don't know, but we're the third largest agency who have square footage in this state. Only the university system and DAS has more square footage under roof than we do. Our buildings, although most of them are paid for at least by half federal monies, nevertheless, those state dollars that are so precious to us to keep our facilities operating and open. And a good 55-60% of our facilities were constructed after World War II. So the mode of construction and the level of energy consciousness is lacking in most. Now, we have worked diligently over the last decade to try to improve those facilities as a cost-saving measure, and we think that any method that the state can come up with to help us achieve those goals, we're certainly willing to do that. Give you a couple of examples quickly. The 1.5% for solar that was enacted by the 2007 legislative session. We were sought approval and moved the requirement for a $70 million building we're going to construct in June, starting in June at Camp Withicum up in the Portland area, Clackamas. And we moved that 1.5% to Ontario, where we're in construction of a facility right now. Looking at the available sun days and looking at the potential, we believe that Ontario was a better return to the state and certainly gain more value. We're excited about this program. We think it's going to make a good deal of a difference in how we operate our facilities, assuming we have money to operate them in the next session. Also, we've established our first wind generation capability at Camp Rylea on the Oregon coast. It's a small generating operation, but we're looking at larger ones. And we're also engaged with the Department of Energy in seeking the former over-the-horizon backscatter radar site at Christmas Valley to work with a public-private partnership to develop a solar farm down there. I would tell you that most of our facilities are lacking in glazing, insulation, and heating plants. The governor saw fit in his last budget to provide, in his recommendation, the legislature approved it, for $1.4 million for our agency to go to some of these older facilities and improve them, mainly looking at energy costs, and also looking at ways that we could earn more rental revenue, which we earn a considerable amount on our facilities. We have 40 armories throughout the state, so we're virtually in every community. The last thing I would mention is the other issue that we're looking into right now, and we've actually purchased one, an all-electric hydraulic airplane tug that we use here in Salem for our facilities, our aviation facility. This removed the former tug that we basically have sitting there now. The soldiers that operate this thing love this Electro. It's completely battery-operated. Plug it in at night and go home. We burn absolutely no diesel fuel now to move our aircraft around. We're working with Electro, who is a Warrenton company, and we're working with them right now, I think it's Representative Boone's district, to try to expand this into the Air Force, not just the Air Guard, but the Air Force. I hope we can get some movement on that in the next year and maybe get the entire United States Air Force using tugs built in Astoria would be our goal. And again, we know we're doing a study right now to determine how much carbon we can remove by getting rid of those tugs that do this kind of work. So we're moving forward, and this bill, I think, is the right kind of public policy for this state to be operating in, and it will help us, I think, all of us, all agencies, but we're looking forward to the opportunity to utilize this mechanism to try to continue on with our upgrades.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon and members of the House Environment and Water Committee, my name is Michael Mason. I'm here representing the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. The tribes support House Bill 3199 and appreciate your inclusion of tribal buildings in the bill. One of the buildings that's almost complete at Warm Springs is the new media center that will house the tribal newspaper, Spilyai Taimu, which means coyote speaks for those of us here who don't speak Sahaptan, Spillier Time, and the radio station, KWSO, the voice of the Warm Springs Reservation. Building's about 95% complete. It was planned for solar panels and tankless water heating, but there was no funding for these energy improvements. So the building will open by June, would be available, would be eligible for these improvements thanks to this bill. Also, the Tribal Administration Center, like most of the buildings at Warm Springs, was built during the period of very cheap power. There's not much insulation, the glazing's inadequate, and so forth. So, especially with the conditions there, ranging from minus 10 degrees to 110 degrees, it's very important to do this kind of retrofit. We thank you for hearing the bill and the tribe's words about it, and hope you will soon move the bill to the floor and that the House will send it soaring to the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. And it may have a couple of stops before it gets to the floor, but we'll try to get it there eventually. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Brock Howell, and I'm an advocate for Environment Oregon. We have 30,000 members statewide, and we work to protect clean air, clean water, and open space. And we're here in support of HB 3199. Oregon has always led in environmental protection, and as we shift our economy towards including or taking account of global warming pollution, is critical that government and political and public facilities lead by example for industry to follow. And that's why we're supporting the bill. And so I'd like to provide a little recent thing in the news as an example why we need to do this. The Washington Department of Environmental Quality 13 years ago found in their stream in Clark County that there was pollution happening. And then just last week, we found out in the Oregonian that they had sourced it back to their own DEQ headquarters in Clark County. This is pretty much what we're doing with our own public facilities as well throughout the country, is that we're emitting global warming pollution by not having appropriate energy efficiency in place. And so if we are to lead industry into making the right actions, we need to be taking steps first to make sure our public facilities are energy efficient. And so we urge you to support HB 3199.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, General Caldwell, for bringing up Electro. If anybody in the room knows Richard Branson, I'd like to challenge him to use those tugs on all of his air to move them out and back to on the tarmacs instead of starting up the plane at the gate. And I'm just wondering how much we could save on that.
A ton.
You know everybody, Mike. You might.
Yeah, I'll call Richard. I'm sure he'll take my call.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Let's finish off with Joe Esmond, who's back in the room. If you still want to come on up, that would be great. I'll give you 2 minutes like the rest.
That's fine. This is all I got left.
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Joe Esmond. I am a business rep for the IBW 48. I am here on behalf of all the electricians and our contractors who are 100% in favor of this bill. For you, I worked with a couple of you already over the past year, and it's been a lot of hard work. I'm also part of the Energy Trust of Oregon. I've been on there off and on for about 7 years on Conservation Advisory Council, so this is a huge thing for me to see this stuff happen. And also, one of my other hats, I work with the federal legislators, our congressional people, and I have pushed this with them over the years that there's an infrastructure set up across the state between from architects down to insulators, down to guys who put the windows in. And this, so when that federal money starts to come, we will be in a premier position to attract that. So how's that for 2 minutes?
That beats it.
I'll take any questions. And I did advise some people with the first stuff we do, let's do it not in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you. Henry, why don't you come on up as well?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Henry Kramer, Bus Project, Sarah's in the other hearing room with
me.
This gentleman. I don't have a whole lot to say about the bill. Simply, it's a good bill, and it should pass. I'm speaking to House Bill 3199, that is. A lot of stimulus bills have been talked about, at least by some, as generational theft. This strikes me more as a generational gift. Not only does it create jobs, but it helps ease the burden on the young people of Oregon moving into the future. Ease the tax burden, saves energy, saves money. And for that purpose, on behalf of the young people of Oregon, we say pass this bill because we'll thank you for it later. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Jefferson? Sorry, Representative. Joe, hang on. I don't know if this question is for you or Henry, but
it's just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Just a comment. You guys can go.
with all due respect to my good friend,
up or down,
Joe Esmond, we have a county building in my district that could probably use some renovation as well. Too,
so. I am working on a task force with that. Thank you.
Representative Smith, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for letting me go last. For the record, Jefferson Smith, State Representative, District 47. Very often we have representatives go first, allowing me to go last. I have to be here anyway, and it allows me to be shorter if I speak late. I'll just respond to a couple of the thoughts that I heard from members of the committee. First, with regard to stimulus dollars, no promises, I think, but the degree we can demonstrate our leadership in this sector, the greater I think we will be in terms of grant worthiness vis-a-vis competitive projects. And we know that the federal government has demonstrated some pleasantness, likeliness, preference, approval towards investment in efficient public buildings. They have dedicated some dollars already to that. Second, to emphasize, on the jobs front, we have over $200 million in shovel-ready projects right now. I believe the Department of Energy has heard of something like $1.5 billion in energy-efficient projects generally. Also wanted to put a plug in for House Bill 2626, which I view as a critical bill. It's a very cool thing. Kudos to Representative Bailey for not only doing that, but also helping to offering to help this, and hope that that will move forward with all of our support. The last thing I'll say, this is my first and, you know, our first session. And out there as an organizer, working with folks, we find that the more we elevate the energy in the room, the more we can get folks to do stuff. And so you elevate your volume, you hasten your pace, you stand up, you be louder. In this process, very often, the opposite is true. The more you can lower the energy and make it seem like it's a technical fix, the more likely it is that it will sail through with little objection.
So this bill does absolutely nothing.
So this is a very small bill that has almost no impact on the world, which is why I support it so strenuously. We've already heard the benefits from jobs to environment to fiscal responsibility to potential for stimulus dollars to the taxpayer savings to consumer benefits to the generational benefits. And even though I know that we're supposed to very often lower energy, I think when we're talking about making this state, whether it's with the EAST program or with hydrogen or with this, making this state a capital, a Saudi Arabia, a Silicon Valley, and a green jobs economy, win-win-win, urban-rural, that is worth some energy, that is worth some volume, that is worth some emphasis. And with that, I will just say thanks very much. You asked for 45 minutes. We started 2 minutes
well.
Late.
You did pretty well.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Representative Smith. Representative Bailey.
Just a quick question.
Oh,
yes.
Look at that.
For the good representative, to quote a TV person, Representative, in some would you say this is a great bill or the greatest bill?
This is a great, I would not deign to say it's the greatest bill. This is a very good bill among other bills that I think are also very good.
Thank you. Why don't you rejoin us at the dais, because I am going to note a couple of things for the record and then move to work session on this bill. We have testimony from Climate Solutions in support of 3199. We also have a letter from Solar World in support of 3199. And with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3199 and open a work session on House Bill 3199. And Beth, do you have a script? This may be, yes, you do. Let's take a motion and then see if there's discussion.
Me, really? Me? Okay, I'll do it. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3199 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 3199 to the floor with, see, I'm supposed to repeat it, to the floor, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. And there was a due pass recommendation in there as well. Is there a discussion? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be the one negative voice here, and I'll just say that it seems to me that the concept is excellent, and in better economic times, this would be a really good idea. I'm going to see this bill again, I think, because it goes to revenue, doesn't it not?
That's right.
And so I'll have an opportunity there, and I'm going to vote to move it to revenue, but I want to be clear that I may well vote otherwise at that committee. I just want to point out that the $50 million number is a very small number in relation to our $157 billion GDP for our state. So as far as kickstarting our economy, it doesn't. It's barely a nudge. As far as having to pay the money back, we certainly need to impose some requirements. We heard a lot about the leveraging and a lot about all the good things that are going to come from this, and they may, but they're not in the bill, and we would have to make sure that the department indeed followed through with its requirement that this expenditure leveraged significant other monies. It seems to me that we are in a most desperate time fiscally. Our state is facing it. It doesn't come up as maybe as often as it should, and the thought that we would be borrowing money for these purposes is hugely optimistic in the sense of how well our economy is going to be doing. And I hope indeed that it works the way everyone testified today. I will just say that it seems to me our borrowing capacity of about $1.2 billion should be reserved for emergency matters, and this, many would say, because it creates some jobs, fulfills that purpose. But I would say we have to plan for the worst, and I'm not sure that we are doing so with this bill. But this issue will come up again in revenue, I'm sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Benz. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Representative Benz. I think excellent comments. Although I disagree with you to the core of my being, I think it's really important that we make sure we don't get close to our bond ceiling. I think that's really so that we have it for a rainy day. I will argue and that this is one of the better things we can do in a rainy day for the jobs benefits that you suggested and for the fiscal savings that we have heard and for the fiscally responsible fact that we haven't had any of these default, which makes them, I think, a relatively attractive relatively attractive thing. And the last thing I want to say, as it moves forward, in terms of whether it's going to be $50 million or another number, I think it's one of the reasons for the post referrals. I very much appreciate you getting out of this committee, and we'll work to address your concerns as we move to revenue and through the process.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Excuse?
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. The bill is sent to the Committee on Revenue. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3199 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2749. And I believe we have Senator Przanski and Representative Esquivel here on that bill.
Put John between us.
There you go. Put him in the hot seat.
In any order, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative of District 6. Today we bring in front of you an additional tax on the amusement device tax in the state of Oregon. To give you some background, we represent, Senator Przanski and I are on the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps Board. Let me give you the advisory board. Let me give you an overall view of what that particular
entity is. We are in every county that each of us represent. Every summer, we have work programs for at-risk youth in your counties, all 36 counties. They're comprised of people that live in the county, and they're comprised of at-risk youth, and it provides summer employment for these youths. Since 1993, the additional tax for OICC in the ADT, which is the amusement device tax for OICC, has remained at $10. We get $10 for every machine, that is every lottery machine, every poker machine, every gaming device in the state of Oregon as the amusement device tax during the tax year. This increase we're asking for is to go from $10 to $20, so it's a $10 increase on the amusement device tax. Oregon's minimum wage has increased from $4.75 in 1993 to $8.40 in 2008, while OICC's revenue has remained the same. OICC is hoping to provide approximately $11,100 funding for each one of these counties. This is the same amount distributed in 1993. We would like to increase that. In 1993, OICC funded our school year community stewardship core programs an average of $41,333. In 2008 is down to about $17,500 due to this factor. Based on the consumer price index, which is of course inflationary factor, if we had that same $11,111 today, it would be the equivalent of $16,316, and of course the $41,333 would be the equivalent of $96,000 in 2009. OICC has grown their school year community stewardship core programs from 7 in 1993 to 23 in 2008-2009, and this has 4 planning grants that will be eligible for funding in 2009 and 2010. All programs have waiting lists. I repeat, all programs have waiting lists, so the demand is there. Lottery revenues are down approximately 20%, and OICC finds itself unable to support our current programs at their existing level, and that is why we are in front of you today to increase the revenue stream for Oregon Youth Conservation Corps for your kids in your counties. I will pass it off to Senator Prozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senator Floyd Prozanski represents District 4, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas County. Thank you very much for having us here today to give kind of a perspective of the overview of what the bill provides under House Bill 2749. As the good representative said, what we're attempting to do is increase the amusement tax that has not been modified since its existence when it came to creation in 1993 from $10 to $20. The reason for this is really for the person that's sitting to my left and to Representative Escobar's right, and that's John Asher, who will be speaking here briefly, who is the director of OICC, and making certain that he is able to provide the programs that all of us think are very important. This legislature made a decision to make a conscious effort to have youth from each of our communities to be able to be involved in local projects. Previous to that policy shift, it was basically open for individuals in any part of the state going into other areas and actually working. One of the goals I think all of us had as a legislature is what could we do for the kids that we represent and their families, and giving these young people, many of them who are at risk, the opportunity to find value not only in what they do but where they do it, and so they can actually go back to within their own communities and take pride for the work they've done. I'm here in total support. Representative Escobar and myself have been involved with OICC on the advisory committee. I believe it's going on three and a half years, if I'm not mistaken. And over that time, we've seen a very hard effort being accomplished by the staff that we have, but we also know that we're not reaching all the kids. As the representative said, there are a number of individuals that would like to be participating in this program, and are, in fact, on a waiting list. There is some good news that we want to make certain that everyone is aware of, and this is one of these one-time shot in the arms with the federal stimulus money that's coming into the state. We are going to see an opportunity in the next couple of years to actually have more youth involved in programs. But what we're here today is actually looking at the long term, making certain that we as Oregonians are going to continue to see the support that we need by having the amusement tax move from a moderate level of 10 up to a modest $10 to $20. And we're asking for your support today so this bill can, in fact, be moved forward into the process and will be able to be considered through the let's say, the longevity of this session. And at this time, it's my honor and pleasure to introduce to you John Asher, who is the director of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Representative. Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Asher, and I am the director of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. It's a program housed within the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to come before you today and speak about what I believe is the best-kept secret in state government. The Oregon Youth Conservation Corps was created by the legislature in 1987 with a threefold purpose: to establish a disadvantaged and at-risk youth program to perform conservation work in the most cost-effective manner, to protect, conserve, rehabilitate the natural, historical, and cultural resources of the state, and to increase education, training, and employment opportunities for the purpose of improving work skills, instilling a work ethic, and increasing employability. To accomplish these goals, OYCC has developed two programs, and you've heard a little bit about them already. The first is the Summer Conservation Corps. OYCC funds equally into each of Oregon's 36 counties each summer. These are local-based county programs. We work with local Conservation Corps providers from a wide range of backgrounds. We work with juvenile departments, Workforce Investment Act providers. We work with nonprofits, a really wide range of folks. They apply to us through a competitive bid process. They're selected by our OYCC Advisory Committee, and we distribute the funds. We provide the training and support to these programs on the ground. We also offer a regional residential grant for a program that may be located in a remote location or requires more resources to accomplish. We served over 600 youth last year in the Summer Conservation Corps, and as Representative Esquivel said, we have kids on the waiting list in every county. The second program that we fund is called the Community Stewardship Corps program. These are alternative education programs located in about 18 counties statewide. We have 23 currently operating programs with four additional programs eligible for funding this year. The youth spend about 40% of the time in the classroom, 40% of the time in the field, and another 20% of the time integrating the two together. Community Stewardship Corps participants are eligible to receive up to $125 a month in scholarships that they can use at any 2 or 4 year university or trade school nationwide. Since 1992, OYCC has awarded about $1.86 million in scholarships to participants, and we served about 600 youth in that program also last year. I did bring some annual reports. I apologize for not getting them out, but I will leave some here, and all the demographics are included in those. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. In the back of the annual report, it shows a list of the 535 local partners that we worked with statewide in the last year to support our programs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Asher. Thank you, Senator, Representative. Committee members, we don't have anybody else signed up to testify. This is an opportunity to ask questions about the program or about the proposal. It is my hope that we can move it along to revenue today. As you know, we're facing our bill deadline, and we need to keep this moving. I would note that the fiscal and revenue statements we're getting, some of them are interesting, and these basically say we'll do a more thorough analysis when it gets on the revenue. So I think given the load that those two offices are facing this week and next, they're sort of expecting that, well, assuming this stays alive, they'll have an opportunity to analyze the proposal more thoroughly. But this would be a great opportunity to ask any questions before we go to work session on this bill. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge yet another comment, I just wanted to thank Senator Przanski and Representative Esquivel and your work, sir, on the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. One of my first jobs, actually, was working on a program that was affiliated with the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. I was 14 or 15 years old working out in the woods and swinging a Pulaski and doing some work, and it was a pretty formative experience, and I have a lot of respect for the work the program does.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you for that comment. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're not going to find much criticism or disagreement on the program, that's for sure. I want to talk a little bit about the mechanism. What do we know from lottery on using this as a vehicle?
Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam, I contacted the lottery last week and asked for some updated numbers. As far as I have been told from Department of Revenue, the lottery funds are looking like they're about 20% down. I did contact the lady I work with at the lottery on the amusement device tax, and those numbers that just came out don't appear to be down as much as 20%, but when I ask for a future forecast, they would not commit, and that's pretty much where they came from. It was... It's a wait and see. Only part of our funding is from the registration. Part of it is usage, and the usage is the part that's down.
Follow up. It would appear to me it's pretty minimal in terms of the whole scheme of lottery and revenue from those machines. But I do have to say, as a caution, in my district, those... which I kind of hate, those tiny little casinos known as restaurants and bars are really on a thread right now. This isn't a lot of money, but they don't have a lot of money. So I have a concern for how that impacts a small restaurant or bar with a bank of five or six machines that this state has said we really need the income from. I mean, that's a very complicated relationship that I don't lay at your door. But I just want you to know, you don't have to comment, you can if you want. I am concerned about the mechanism and its effect.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillum, I think the one thing we want to make certain everyone understands, because we are talking two different numbers set here, what here is basically the tax that's on the machine itself. And so it's not based on how much revenue comes in or doesn't have any impact as to what amount that the vendors that are actually operating the machines. This is basically the unit is actually receives a $10 tax now. It would increase to $20. And as we've said in our testimony, it's been 16 years since that has actually been, say, addressed. And we would hope that unless it's an organization that has a extraordinary number of machines within their total framework, that it would be minimal as to them continue to do business.
And now, if I can follow up.
Final follow-up.
And, Senator, I appreciate that, and I'm glad you clarified it. I agree. It's important people understand we're not getting involved in the revenue stream.
Right.
But, Correct. Again, to a small business, a few hundred bucks here and a few hundred bucks there is significant at this particular time, and that's my only point. But you're right. I don't want people to think that this is dipping into the whole complicated layout of lottery funds. It's not, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing forward the bill. We've had a chance to talk about it before, and I really appreciate your support of the program. And you know, any program that can get my friend Representative Bailey swinging a Pulaski is a you know, program for me. And obviously produces great people. My question is a little ancillary. It is, what should we actually call an amusement device? I think that's a ridiculous thing to call it.
Like I know that what this means is that's the thing at the, you know, Freddy's and Go that's on the corner where it's like a little baby casino. But that phrase sounds like it could be the place that's three doors down called the Love Boutique, and it's just a different store entirely. And it seems to me that we should call these things what they are. And I don't think they're amusement devices. They're probably gambling machines. And I just kind of want to put it on the record, because we have rare chances to do that, that if we're wanting to have plain language in our statutes, when it said we wanted to put a fee on amusement devices, I thought we were probably talking about what we're talking about, but I really wasn't sure until I looked at the definition.
Representative, perhaps your experience is different than mine, because when I read amusement taxes, I thought, or amusement devices, I thought Ferris wheels, not Love Boutiques. But
I haven't been to my district.
Mr. Chair.
Drive down Gleason and go for a while.
Representative Smith, I believe we're using the same terminology out of the lottery itself. So.
No, you're using the correct terminology. I'm wondering if we should think about having plain language that, you know, changes the words.
I don't know that we need a...
Like a gambling machine
this question,
tax?
But yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, in speaking with Mr. Asher, he said that originally when that term was phrased, we did at one point have other type of devices besides lottery machines,
yeah,
including pinball type. That sunset it, so it's my understanding that is not included in this, mm-hmm, and it is limited. But as we all know, if you are playing the lottery, it is supposed to be for amusement, not for profit.
Right. Thanks very much.
Your public service announcement for the day, I think. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was going to offer to take Representative Smith to the Seaside Library next weekend, if he'd like to go. Introduce you to books, which are another amusement device.
Exactly. That's on books. Exactly. I consider this committee an amusement device.
Yeah. My real statement was going to be, more seriously, this program is the source of, if not the only, one of the great sources of labor for the Watershed Council restoration projects and building trails, et cetera. And if any of you have ever gone on some of the tours of the Watershed Council projects, I could almost guarantee that part of the work was done by this group. And these kids that, and to address Representative Gilliam's comments about the cost, for an additional, you know, it's probably under $100. I don't know. My places that have these machines have about four or five maybe total. But it's a small price to pay for the experience of turning, and I was born in Portland, so I can say this, these city boys into farm boys and girls. And it's a great experience. They get a lot of kind of experience. You get teamwork, things like that, and it's a great thing to do with their summer. And sometimes they get rained on, but they are happy kids. They really are. They do good work.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, I would hope that each and every one of you, if you have an opportunity when OICC, we have our meetings around the state, that you do participate not only in our meetings, get to learn about your kids, but more importantly, do the field trip with us the next day, and you will get to see what those kids are doing in your community. I believe two or three years ago, we were in, and I can't remember what county it was in Eastern Oregon County, we were the highest, I repeat, the highest employer of youth in that county. So that's good stuff, folks.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I don't think anyone can quarrel with the quality of the use of the funds. And I want to join Representative Gilliam in noting that this will get referred, as I understand it, to revenue.
It will.
And so once again, we'll have an opportunity, I think, to look at what actually is happening in the places they're using those machines, and we'll be able to see that indeed, I believe, the cash flow from the gaming operations is shrinking because the state is taking a greater share and the operator a smaller share. Therefore, the focus that we need to make on those who are paying the increased fee will occur at revenue, and thus, once again, should this matter come up, I'll be voting with that qualification.
I appreciate that. With that, if there are no further questions.
Mr. Chair, if we could just put one other thing on the record, I think regarding the number of machines, I just wanted to make certain it is six machines that are is the limit for these facilities. So if one of these facilities actually had the maximum number of machines, it would be an increase of $60 to their operation on an annual basis.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2749 and open a work session on House Bill 2749. And anybody want to make a motion? Here, let's send it this way. How about a motion on House Bill 2749?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2749 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2749 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to revenue by prior reference. Is there any further discussion? I think we've covered the topic. Representative Gilliam?
We have covered it. I just would add, Mr. Chair, I will gladly give a courtesy vote to this with and reserve the right as we move through our process to vote on the floor. But it is because of the work that they do that I believe I am compelled by the testimony to be supportive. I just have the reservations that I already recorded.
Thanks for sharing that. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative
Blue?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Kent?
Aye. Motion carries, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Revenue. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2749. And while we're in work session mode, he's left, but I think that's okay. What we're going to do is open a work session on HJM 11. This work session, members, is just for the purpose of moving this bill. We're moving bills to revenue, as you can see today. We're not even going to move this for recommendation today. We're going to get this over to revenue where Representative Barnhart can pay closer attention to it between now and adjournment. He's on a different scheduled deadlines, or the revenue committee is on a different set of deadlines than we are, so we're not planning to take testimony, not planning to move it with recommendation, just getting it over to revenue, and the revenue committee can take it up there. It's HJM 11. Urging President and Congress to ensure that revenues realized from carbon sequestration projects on federal lands are shared with state and county governments. Could I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move HJM 11 without recommendation to the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Smith moves HJM 11 without recommendation to the Committee on Revenue. Any discussion? Seeing none, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye. Excuse?
Representative
Benz. Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
No.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. And HJM 11 is sent to the Committee on Revenue. And with that, I'll close the work session on HJM 11 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2676. This bill creates the crime of unlawful disposition of a tobacco product. And we're going to call Representative Tomei. Okay. Yes. I am planning to carry over House Bill 2859, so we will not do a work session on that bill today. We'll carry it over until Thursday. Members, you should have the dash two amendments, is that right?
Yeah.
Encourage you to look those over and send any... be prepared to consider those amendments as early as Thursday. And that's it. Okay, committee will stand at ease as we wait for Representative Tomei.
of unlawful disposition of a tobacco product. The reasoning behind the introduction of this bill is simple. The number one littered item in the United States is cigarette butts. In one day, 869 butts were picked up along the Oregon coastline in one day. This litter creates a wide variety of negative impacts, including toxic chemicals leaching into our environment, fire hazards, children and animals ingestion, and huge costs for cleanup. In 1998, there were 2.1 billion pounds of cigarette filters discarded worldwide. Unlike paper products, cigarette filters are not biodegradable. Nearly all cigarette filters are composed of a bundle of 12,000 plastic-like cellulose acetate fibers. It can take years, in some cases up to 15 years, for the fibers to decay into a plastic powder that cannot be seen. As the filters degrade, their deadly toxins, including lead, arsenic, and cadmium, are released into our environment. The nicotine trapped inside 200 used filters is sufficient to kill an adult human being, 50 to 60 milligrams. Imagine a month without rain, followed by a brief thunderstorm that washes hundreds of thousands of nicotine-laden filters, enough to kill 2,500 human beings, into area creeks and streams. Aquatic life at the bottom of the food chain pays a deadly price, but so do the birds and fish who mistake them for food. Nicotine isn't the only billion, as trapped tars and toxic gases leach into waterways too. Careless disposition of cigarettes also creates fire hazards. If a butt is simply dropped, it can smolder for up to 3 hours. Nationally, annual human and property costs of fires caused by careless smoking total about $6 billion. In 1997, there were more than 130,000 cigarette-related fires. In January 2001, a motorist driving along Interstate 8 in San Diego County flicked a cigarette butt into the center median, sparking a fire that eventually burned more than 10,000 acres, destroying 16 homes and charred 64 vehicles. There are many similar stories out there mirroring this story. Cigarette butts littering the ground are not just ugly, they present a real threat to wildlife. Fish, birds, whales, and other marine creatures mistake the butts for food. Plastic pieces and residue are then found in their stomachs along with high exposure to the toxic chemicals contained in cigarette butts. Studies conducted by Clean Virginia Waterways show that the chemicals in cigarette butts easily leach out of the butts and are deadly to water fleas, which are a small but important animal in the aquatic food chain that lives in most freshwater lakes and streams, as well as the ocean. Within just 1 hour of contact with water, the chemicals begin to leach into the aquatic environment and threaten the well-being of marine life. Additionally, the CDC studied 146 children aged 6 months to 2 years who had ingested cigarettes or cigarette butts. One-third of them experienced illness. The most common symptom reported was vomiting. Most ingestions occurred in homes where children were exposed to smoke and where cigarettes and ashtrays were kept within the reach of children. Moreover, with 3.2 million butts being picked up in 2008 at beaches and waterways, it would be fairly easy for children at the beach or park to pick up the butts and ingest them. Those of us who have children and grandchildren can see how children just pick up anything that's on the ground and will put it into their mouths. Finally, cleaning up cigarette butt litter can carry an enormous cost. For example, Virginia's Department of Transportation spends more than $6 million every year in picking up litter along Virginia's roads. House Bill 2676 will not only raise awareness on this increasing problem, but will actually make it a crime punishable by a fine or community service. The monies generated by this fine will be able to help with the cleanup, and community service will cut down on the amount of litter throughout Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to speak today, and I'm certainly open to any questions except by your vice chair, Mr. Kent.
I won't acknowledge his
thank you
desire to ask any questions. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews. I am the State Representative, House District 50, the great city of Gresham. Here today to testify on behalf and in favor of House Bill 2676. It's an honor to be testifying next to Representative Tomei and appreciate her bringing this bill forward. As many of you know, I'm a firefighter in the city of Gresham. I am a lieutenant, which is company officer. And I found this bill really interesting because, you know, I think we could all probably agree that just when you see somebody, you know, throw a cigarette out of their window, it becomes somewhat of a nuisance. And when you see them piled up along the roadway or on the beaches or on property, again, it's a bit of a nuisance. But I'm here to talk to you about when that nuisance becomes a greater situation, an emergency. Case in point, when I talked to my fire chief last night in a conversation, he says, well, don't forget to tell the committee about the 57 responses we had within less than a month time frame on bark dust fires alone in the corridor of Eastman Parkway and Division. Along this stretch of road...
Hang on. I've gotten to the point where I actually almost don't hear the buzzing of the microphones, but just so folks know, that's caused by cell phones that are too close to a microphone. So if you have BlackBerry, pager, cell phone, whatever, I don't know if anybody has pagers anymore, but those need to be off while we're in the hearing room so as not to interfere with the recording equipment. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt, Representative.
No problem, Chair Cannon. Thank you. But I just kind of give you the lay of the land there is what we have is some built-up medians like many of the different cities do. And they've done that for area beautification to attract to the mall. It was actually on an agreement to the mall that they do the best to beautify the parking strips along Division and Eastman Parkway. There's also the MAX line that runs through there. So you can imagine when people are sitting in the left turn lane along the parking strip, which is filled with bark dust and foliage, and, of course, the arms drop for MAX or the light changed to red, as they sit there, we end up with folks that will flick their cigarettes into that flower bed. It becomes a real problem with us in the summer months. Bark dust fires, as you heard Representative Tomei say, cigarettes will smolder for up to 3 hours. Bark dust will do the same. The effect can be that it smolders deep into the soil. It is problematic for us. It's a problem for our transportation route as well, having a fire engine block traffic to fight these fires in the middle of the road. And these aren't scorching fires that are spreading and going to damage our entire community. They are what they are. They're a nuisance. They're a problem, and they're something that can be prevented. I particularly, when I read this bill, I really like the fact that it makes it a crime and Class B misdemeanor, but that it will also give the judge the authority to actually put these people to work, to clean up the problems that they're making, and to fix what they're doing to society in terms of degradation. So I guess I'm here as a state representative of House District 50, but also a firefighter, saying, I understand the land of priorities with what we're doing. This may not seem like the number one priority of the state, but I think it is, in terms of a nuisance, it is a priority of those that see it. It's egregious in nature, and I'm glad we're taking a step forward. So appreciate your time today and available to answer your questions.
Thank you, Representative Matthews. Are there questions? Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, I'm struck by your point that these aren't large fires often. These are sometimes just smoldering fires. Can you talk to the extent that you're able to about just ballpark? What are the costs to a department when it has to go out and respond even to a small smoldering fire and it has to send out the truck and get everybody geared up for that?
Chair Cannon, Representative Bailey, unfortunately, I've never had to field the question on what it costs for our response. As we're a paid staff 24 hours, 7 days a week, around the clock, and we respond to a number of emergencies. I can tell you that the bigger cost to me might be the fact that while we're tending to the needs of that incident, there's others that are left without, and that's one. The other thing, too, that I'd mention is that just because the ones I'm referring to in a parking strip and bark dust might be small, all fires become big that start small, and it's based on detection. Fortunately, a lot of these happen in high-profile areas on the roadway that people call. We have a bigger issue in rural communities where they become wildland fires, extinguishing materials. Will you catch those people? It's unknown, but it is a big issue. And the other thing also is a tremendous dollar loss in this when you don't think about just cost to a city. Of course, every time you turn the engines, there is cost associated with diesel fuel, manpower, everything else that comes with the men and women that serve. But aside from that, the structures can be burned. You can also have, of course, automobiles. Those all have costs associated too. So I've been on a number of fires, more than I can count. of caused by cigarettes, whether they're in a mattress or they're in somebody's planter box, actually had complete knee reconstruction surgery because of a improperly discarded cigarette on a third-story balcony fire that I was on and fell off the ladder. So it's, you know, that's when something senseless like that occurs, it kind of gets you pretty upset, pretty disappointed that it could have been prevented. But that's kind of the nature of our business. The majority of our responses could have been prevented, with the exception of some of our medical, which, of course, there again. So I didn't really answer your question. I apologize, Representative Bailey, but I don't have those stats in front of me.
Follow up, Representative Bailey.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that did answer my question, Representative, and I think it, the point in my mind is that for even small fires, even if it's just a simple butt out the window, that it can cost our local fire departments quite a bit of money and time and resources and opportunity cost in a time when we're slashing budgets already. So I would argue that it is important right now.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't expect that. You know, when my friend from Gresham brings a bill or supports a bill about that has to do with fire, I pay attention, so I appreciate you being here, Representative. My friend from Milwaukee is another story, and I just wanted to check two quick things, Representative Tomei. On the first page of your testimony, the fourth paragraph, the last sentence, I didn't understand what you said. Nicotine isn't the only, and then I didn't understand what you said.
The fourth paragraph, the nicotine trapped inside 200 use filters.
No, the last sentence of that paragraph.
Imagine a month. Nicotine isn't the only bill.
Dylan. I didn't hear that. That's helpful. And
thank
then lastly,
you for the correction.
On the last page, is it your testimony, I just want to be sure, that 3.2 million butts are being picked up at beaches and waterways each year?
That's true.
You're sticking by that then?
Absolutely, Representative.
Well, I have to say I'm supporting this bill. This is one of my pet peeves, and I think as legislators we have to be careful, you know, not to let our own proclivities get involved. But I cannot abide this for the reasons that you already said, and I witness it all the time, as I imagine other people do. And my hope is, we have talked, it's not so much the penalty that's involved. We know our police officers and our firefighters have other things to do. But if this bill will become a prevention, will become a deterrent, people realize you don't do that, and we can start changing behavior, then I think it's a one worth passing. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Representative Gilliam and Representative Chair Cannon. Could I add something? We do have in an amendment that would make this a Class D misdemeanor, so there would be a fine. Not, I think the first bill did say, what was it? It was a Class
B. Under this bill, it's a Class B, and you said the amendment would do what?
Make it a Class D.
Okay.
Yes, so it would be a fine rather than a more severe penalty.
Okay.
And the other thing I would like to say regarding the question from Representative Bailey, if I may, that I also gave you some other materials from other people who had sent the materials to us, and one by Mary Ellen Holly, who was the president and CEO of Keep Oregon Green. She said a total of 42 smoking-related wildfires in Oregon last year burned almost 170 acres and cost $639,000 to suppress. So it is an expensive proposition.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are the kind of bills we normally hear in judiciary, and which I have to spend lots of hours in every week. And questions I typically ask include the following, and I'll ask them all in a bunch. One is, do we have any hunch about fiscal impact? The thing you just said might resolve some of that question. Second, do we know anything about, well, Class D, never mind, your amendment answers that question. And then third, do we know anything about what other states, what other jurisdictions do to resolve the tobacco butt problem? And you know, it happens in my district for sure a lot.
And let me point out to the committee, we're waiting still for a fiscal statement on this bill. We won't be able to move it today, and it sounds like we may have an amendment as well, which may change that. So
yes, I'm sure.
Perhaps you want to address what other states or any part of Representative
Smith? Well, I know Japan, they carry small portable ashtrays, and I'm not sure if other states, I'm going to turn to my staff, wherever she is.
I'm not sure, but may I come up and say something?
Sure.
Okay. Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Alsbrooks. I'm staff to Representative Tomei. I just wanted to make a clarification about the amendment. I was talking with the district attorney, and as the bill reads right now, it is a jailable crime, so people would have the right to a court-appointed attorney, and we're changing that, so ultimately it shouldn't have a fiscal.
But do you have any information?
No information on other states.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of things that kind of seem to me to be running together in the testimony. For one thing, I hear some discussion about the litter problem. Another thing, I hear some discussion about fire problems. Now, and I'm looking through here, and I don't really see anything that's clarifying, you know, what we're talking about, so it would seem that both topics are legitimate topics to have been talking about. A couple of, it's not necessarily quite a question, I don't think, but maybe I can make a question, Arva.
And Representative, we're going to try to get to another bill still too this afternoon, so at risk of being impudent, I'll ask you to be brief.
To be brief. Well, I don't like to be too long-winded in these things, so I'll try not to be that. I'm very sensitive to the issue of the fire problem. My next-door neighbor had a fire, and his wife was killed in the fire, and it was a consequence of a cigarette butt that was put in garbage in the house. It happened to land next to an aerosol can, and for some unknown reason or known reason or whatever, it ignited that can, and it was a bomb explosion. The house just went, you know, up in flames in no time at all. The issue about cigarette butts in cars and throwing them out and being a problem both in terms of fire and in terms of litter, are you telling me that in the state of Oregon we don't have a law that makes it illegal to put a cigarette butt out, throw a cigarette butt out of the window of a car?
Chair Cannon, Representative Jensen, that's a good question. I believe, in my past life I was a police officer, I do believe there may be still a statute that surrounds the lighted material. Throwing a lighted 476.7415, throwing away of lighted matches, cigarettes, and other materials prohibited. Posting copy of section in public conveyance. So there is something on the books of throwing the lighted material. I think the tough thing in this situation, because I thought about this House Bill 2676, is to distinguish what is lighted and what is not. And I think that it's a problem, period. And as you know, these things can smolder for hours on end. And so what may seem like it's not lighted wouldn't fit under that, but if it ultimately smoldered, it would become. I think this is more about the pollution that ends up being a part of it and just discarding that altogether.
Well, that's fine. And just a quick follow-up on that. My wife and I, a number of years ago, were traveling before I decided to become involved in the legislature. And we were traveling across the United States, RVing across the United States, and we were down in Louisiana, kind of headed west back toward civilization. Had to get through Texas first, but, you know, be that as it may. I observed alongside of the freeway, around 60 miles an hour or 65 miles an hour or whatever, you know, down the freeway, and I observed along the freeway a solid mass of cigarette butts. And it struck me so much that I didn't stop the car or the RV to get out and take pictures of it, but I did take pictures out of the window of the car the pickup at that speed, and they came out just as clear as crystal that it was one solid, just solid cigarette butts. I have to admit, Mr. Chair, it's one of the most hideous sights I've ever seen. And understand, at the time, I was a smoker. So a good deal of sympathy for your bill.
And Chair Cannon, I think there are other people who've come to testify on this bill today.
Yeah, and I would like to move on. But could I get the citation again on the...
Yes.
476.
476.715.
715, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you both very much. For
You're welcome. Thank you for allowing us to come today.
Representative,
thank you, committee.
Question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seemed to me that the part of the bill, if you're going to do an amendment, you might want to address the line 16A, because if your bill works, they're not going to have anything to pick up, and the idea would be that's a mandatory device, so you'd want to change it in some fashion so it was not mandatory. But I had a question, and that is the fireproof container. I think you mentioned that people in Japan have them.
Right.
Are they offered for sale now here?
Yes, and I think that some of the people are coming to testify will show you those. So thank you, Representative.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Cannon.
Representative Jensen, yes, I'm going to be asking members to if they'd be willing to stay a few minutes past 5 because we're running out of time here. Representative Jensen.
What happened to the smokeless tobacco? Is tobacco currently smokeless cigarettes, the type that go out without being puffed on automatically?
I don't know that. I know what you mean, and I don't know about that.
I'm not sure that that's an effect. I know that was last session, I believe, you passed legislation on the self-extinguishing cigarettes,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how those work or if
that's
they even
gone
do.
Into effect. I'd be interested in how that played out.
We'll look into that, Representative.
Thank you very much.
And Chair Cannon, I know you're in a hurry, but that would solve the issue of fire, but that won't solve the issue that this bill addresses,
which is still there.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
So, members, we have 5 folks signed up to testify on this, and I will be inviting them to the dais. And then I want to do about a 10 to 15 minute hearing on 3454 as well. I think that's going to take us until about 5:10. So I'll ask that folks who are able to stay, and we'll go ahead and take testimony until that point. So let's move to public testimony on 2676. Deb Schallert, William Schneider, Gus Gates, we'll start with you, and then we have a couple of other folks to follow. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee. My name is William Schneider. I represent CWPC. We've done 20 years research on cigarette pollution. 20 years ago, there was an article in the Oregonian about the mystery of water pollution in Lake Tahoe. There's no factories around there, and it was a mystery. When I was down in Lake Tahoe looking to find the mystery, and along all the streets was lined with cigarette butts. When it rained, it washed into Lake Tahoe, and all the riverways along the highway would go to Lake Tahoe. And then the other big thing is that the beach pollution, where children play on the beach, and cigarettes are friable. That means they dissolve into a fine dust, and the kids play it around. They can breathe it, and the cancer is on the rise with not only children but everybody. And the other thing, the friable dust goes in the air in a hot climate. It causes skin cancer. They blame the sun. But I blame the chemicals, dust, landing would cause skin cancer, but it's all ignored. And the waterways in Portland, I took a survey on the blocks of cigarettes per block, and the high was 200 butts. And then I watched it rain, and they all went down into the sewer way, into the river. I went to a Clean River meeting about different pollutions in the water besides. Nobody even mentions cigarette butts in this committee. And I brought pictures of all this stuff in the gutters and the rain washing it into the waters. And I says, well, how do you get the chemical waste from the water? You know, like the toxic waste. They had no answer. But anyway, the only solution, this House 2676, like I said, I support it, but my solution that would be final would be put a 10-cent per cigarette refund. They'd have to, when you took the cigarettes to the vendor, he'd have to give the 10 cents back. It would give the value to the cigarette butt, and bums would pick it up. Everybody would pick up the butts for the 10 cents money. I mean, that's my solution. It'll never happen. But cigarette butts causes skin cancer. It causes cancer in water. And the big thing is the children on the beach and all the people that go to the beaches, they're in danger with this toxic, friable waste. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Schneider. And I'll have to ask my vice chair about adding cigarette butts to our bottle bill and see whether that brings his vote along. Thank you.
No, thank you.
So, move on.
Great. Chair Cannon and committee members, for the record, my name is Deb Schallert. I'm a Portland resident and the author of House Bill 2676. Thank you. Oh, and Representative Tomei. I want to thank Representative Tomei and other co-sponsors for introducing this legislation. Thank you very much. I'm here today to ask for your support for a new law aimed at changing the way people think about cigarette butts in Oregon. In the 1980s, I was a park ranger working in our beautiful Oregon state parks. Worked at Silver Falls State Park, over at the coast, in Central Coast, Wallowa Lake, Detroit Lake, all over the state. And as is in the case with all parks employees, my responsibility included picking up litter, the vast majority of which was thousands of cigarette butts. In every beautiful park, I saw firsthand the pervasive litter problem caused by cigarette butts and the amount of staff time required simply to keep our parks clean, time that could have been spent on other maintenance or customer services. In 1990, I spent a year in Japan on a state government exchange program, and part of my responsibilities there were to bring back ideas to this state. There I saw smokers consistently taking personal responsibility for their cigarette butts, and I brought today some examples of these products that people carry around in Japan that I offer for the committee's examination. At that time, a lot of people smoked in Japan, more than today, but smokers each carried a small individual ashtray so they could safely and cleanly dispose of each cigarette and put the container in their pocket and dispose of it properly. And this was rather a revelation to me, frankly, that a culture could address the problem so differently through many people simply taking individual responsibility. But I also realized that we really don't have to have a cigarette butt litter problem here in Oregon. Of course, the time and money wasted on butt removal in this state is not limited to state parks employees. Employees of schools, highways, businesses, and local governments spend their time and money cleaning up cigarette butts. So do thousands and thousands of volunteers throughout this state every year. A significant amount of time and money could be directed to other increasingly pressing needs. Ask anyone involved in these cleanups. The majority of litter is comprised of cigarette butts. I've since left state parks, and I've been patient, thinking attitudes and actions in this area would eventually change like they have regarding cleaning up pet waste. But they haven't, at least not to the degree I believe that we as a state deserve. I authored this legislation to show that Oregon can change. If you put into law that it's clearly not acceptable to litter our beautiful state with cigarette butts, I do believe public behaviors will change. I'm sure some smokers already properly dispose of their cigarette butts, but as more smokers want their own personal ashtray, the need for ashtrays could initiate a new cottage industry in this state. But more importantly, Oregon is a state of firsts in protecting the environment, the bottle bill, our beautiful public beaches, and our land use laws. In celebration of the state's 150th birthday, I'd offer that we raise the bar and lead by example again. Thank you so much for your time and consideration on this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Schallert, for your passion and work on this bill.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment here today. For the record, my name is Gus Gates, and I am the Oregon Policy Coordinator with the Surfrider Foundation. On behalf of our over 600 Surfrider Foundation members and recreational ocean users in the state of Oregon, we wish to express our support for the passage of House Bill 2676, which would create penalties for disposition of tobacco products. Surfrider Foundation members are regular participants of beach cleanups along our coast, and along with plastic bottles, cigarette butts are typically one of the most common items of marine debris that is found. This is a major environmental issue, as cigarette butts take an extremely long time to biodegrade. Furthermore, filters capture many of the toxins in cigarette smoke and then release them into our waters, subsequently creating concerns about impacts to water quality. Oregon prides itself on public access to our beaches and also claims to have the cleanest beaches in the nation. As we celebrate our sesquicentennial this year, we need to do a better job of eliminating a chronic source of trash to our beaches, and this is the right approach to do just that. We all know that the state of Oregon can benefit from any source of revenue. However, this is about deterrence, not generating funds. Creating civil penalties is a necessary mechanism to create a change in behavior that is needed to stop the littering of tobacco products blatantly into our environment. And if I may, I have just a brief video that I would like to share with you that was recommended by Representative Tomei. This was put together by our Newport Youth Volunteers. We work with these kids on education, beach cleanups, and environmental stewardship. So,
roll it.
You gonna smoke that?
Huh? No, are you kidding?
Well, why are you picking it up?
So that we could put it in a jar and show, like, how much pollutant really goes into the...
Was that a student group responsible for the project? Was that a class project?
Yes, it was.
From where, you may have said?
Newport, Oregon. And this is in their extracurricular time that they spent on this as well. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for sharing the video. Any questions for these panelists? Representative Boone.
This reminds me of that thing that we used to do in grade school. Put a tooth in a jar of Coke.
Exactly.
Show you what happens after a week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you
we have a couple of other folks on this bill, Jim Walker and Sarah French.
I have to ask you not to disparage Representative Hannah. Sorry.
Excuse me in here.
Go ahead, Mr. Walker.
Okay, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Walker. I'm the Fire Operations Director for the Oregon Department of Forestry. And being sensitive to the amount of time that you've already put in today and the fact that our two distinguished representatives did a really good job of clarifying what our concerns are, that would complete my testimony, and I would just be here to answer any questions if you had them for me.
Thank you very much. Does the department have a position on this bill?
Due to the fact that it's not within the government's budget, we are neutral at this time on this bill.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Cannon and committee members, thank you for having me. My name is Sarah Fritsch, and I'm a concerned citizen and a proud Oregonian. In April of 2008, in Portland, Oregon, I organized the first annual butt hunt. Within 2 hours, 50-plus volunteers in the rain collected 25,000 cigarette butts from the city streets of Portland, and we barely dented the problem that day. The hunt was an anti-litter effort, not an anti-smoking effort, and I think in passing this bill, we need to be very clear about that. We want smokers to be on our side for this bill. It is strictly an anti-litter campaign. The objective of the hunt was to raise awareness about the ecological impacts of cigarette butt litter. and the prevalence in Portland. We had extensive media coverage, high traffic on our website. We presented to City Council, and there was really a lot of interest about the issue. I think it was a big step forward in terms of awareness. But with the passing of the no-smoking ban in the bars, I think the problem has gotten worse since January. And now on the city streets in Portland, I see even more cigarette butt litter. This is a huge problem in the city as well as in the water, the beaches, and the ocean. Sorry, the beaches, the ocean, and the rivers. It's my opinion that to overcome this epidemic, we would need to have a three-tiered approach. Education and awareness is probably most important. We'd also need receptacles, both the personal receptacles and putting the butts into the garbage, not into the streets and the beaches. And finally, I think that we need to have some enforcement. And I think by passing a bill, I think that would solve a lot of these problems because we would have enforcement and we would raise a lot of awareness. By passing House Bill 2676, we could show the world that Oregon, already a green leader in so many ways, is really taking the lead on this battle of the butts. This is a simple and unique opportunity that could further differentiate us as innovative, forward-thinking green leaders. And finally, just consider the scenario. If you saw one of your fellow citizens toss their coffee cup into the streets, you would probably say something. And think about it. The coffee cup is biodegradable, a paper coffee cup. If you see them flick a butt, most of us don't say anything. And we really should because they're toxic and they're getting into our water system through the storm drains and they're all over our city streets. As a fellow citizen, I'm very inspired by Deb Shallert's passion for this issue. I'm grateful to Representative Tomei and Representative Matthews for speaking up today and championing this bill. And I thank the committee in advance for your careful consideration to move this forward. Thank you.
And thanks for your testimony and your effort in this area. Seeing none, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2676. Thanks to everybody who came and testified on the bill today. And members, we have about 15 minutes, if we can beg your indulgence to stay an extra few, to hear public hearing testimony on House Bill 3454. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3454. We have four folks signed up to testify. I'll just take them in two panels, starting with the bill's proponents. So Christina McNitt and Larry Trosi, it looks like. May not have that right. And you know what kind of time frame we're under. So if you could limit your testimony to no more than a couple of minutes each, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which is a statewide trade association of irrigation district, water control district, and other similar local government districts that deliver agricultural water. Interestingly, in Oregon, almost half of all water rights are delivered through districts. In the interest of time, and because perhaps unfortunately for you, I can usually catch all of you at different times, I would like to yield my time to Larry Trosi, who is the district manager of the Santiam Water Control District, and his comments, I think, follow my written testimony pretty closely. And with that, I'll pass the baton, and thank you, Representative Cannon, for your time today.
Thank you. For the record, Larry Trosi, manager of the Santiam Water Control District. I appreciate Christina doing that. I did spend some time preparing my remarks, so please bear with me if I can. We are interested in this bill because of the impacts that are occurring from development in agriculture areas. Districts throughout the state, Southern Oregon, Central Oregon, Eastern Oregon, and here in the Willamette Valley, are having to address water quality and water quantity issues that our irrigation systems were not designed to handle. Some areas, such as Klamath and Grants Pass Irrigation District, have worked out a plan and an agreement to address discharges of water into an irrigation system with their local governments. However, in my district and in other areas of the state, we have not been successful in getting much cooperation from other local governments to address the impacts that are causing the district's causing problems to the district's delivery system. For the last 6 or 7 years, we have been talking to the city of Staten in my area regarding the amount of discharge of stormwater they have been putting into our system. Currently, stormwater drainage in and about the city of Staten enters Staten's stormwater drainage system and then flows unchecked into the district's Salem ditch. At times, the quantity of the water discharged from the city's system exceeds the capacity of the Salem ditch, causing flooding downstream of the city. In addition, there are no controls assuring the quality of the water entering the canal. The district is concerned about the potential impact of liability from the discharge of polluted water from the city system into the district's canals. In the recent past, there has been a diesel spill that flowed into our canal system and a municipal water pipe that broke, sending a plume of turbidity out into our irrigation system that basically impacted our operation and the operation of several growers. No communication from the city regarding the occurrence or retribution for impacts occurred. These occurrences, along with the amount of water being discharged into our system, forced us to seek an interim drainage agreement with the city of Staten. The proposed agreement would give the district some protection for the quantity and quality of the water the city is discharging into our system. It also proposes to give the city a period of time to find an alternative to using our system for their using other systems for their stormwater. This interim drainage agreement has been discussed somewhat by the two entities, but has not proceeded because the city is reluctant to accept responsibility or liability for the quantity or quality of that water. Instead, the city has proceeded in pursuing the development of a stormwater master plan, which we support. However, even though the plan incorporates what I would consider the best management practices, such as incorporating detention ponds, bioswales, among other things, it still directs water into our system and assumes no liability for doing so. Generally, the discharge of pollutants into the waters of the U.S. require a permit under the Clean Water Act from EPA and or DEQ. Currently, non-point source agriculture discharges into the waters of the U.S. do not require a permit. In addition, some discharges into the waters of the U.S. from small cities do not require discharge permits. However, it is likely that because of the presence of endangered species and public sentiment towards improving water quality of the waters of the U.S., discharge permits for municipal waste and stormwater will be required of all cities in the future. We believe that if the district continues to receive municipal runoff, it will jeopardize our right to discharge waters of the U.S. under the agriculture exemption. It will become costly and time-consuming to the district to manage the city's stormwaters. HB 3454 will allow owners or operators of canals or ditches to incorporate protections into their systems that were designed to handle, that were not designed to handle what is occurring. So, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a fairly complicated situation. It's nice seeing you again, Larry. I've seen Mr. Trocey for about 20 years, and he hasn't aged a bit. The question would be, in the 4 or 5 minutes we have, I don't think we can get into the issues, but I understand, because I have dealt with the exact issue many times across the eastern part of the state, and it's hugely challenging, and everything he says is correct. But now, having said that, if that's enough...
Well, let me be clear about my intention. My hope is that the parties who are involved in this particular situation can resolve it as other places around the state have resolved on a voluntary basis without legislative action. That said, I am interested enough in this issue and concerned enough about this issue to be, you know, willing to entertain this kind of bill and the possibility of, you know, if not moving it along now, then setting up, you know, a work group to deal with a legislative fix if that's what indeed becomes necessary. So I hope perhaps with your background and interest in the issue, Representative Benz, that might be something that you could contribute to if we if they end up, you know, unable to resolve this situation voluntarily.
I'm happy to do so.
That would be great.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Thank you. So let's hear from Dan Eisenbeis and maybe Gary, Jenny, Jerry. Okay. Trouble with handwriting today. Jerry about. Come on up.
Chairman Cannon and members of the House Environmental and Water Committee, good afternoon. My name is Jerry Aboud, and I'm the mayor of the city of Staten. And I'm here to testify in opposition to the House Bill 3454. As drafted, HB 3454 would turn longstanding Oregon law on its head and would have a detrimental impact on Staten and Marion County and every other municipality in Oregon and county in Oregon through which an irrigation canal or drainage ditch crosses. We are concerned that this bill is a result of an ongoing dispute between the City of Staten and the Saniam Water Control District, and its enactment would be an example of the legislature attempting to solve local disputes through the imposition of new statewide laws. In Staten's situation, the Saniam Water Control District owns and operates two canals that traverse the City of Staten, which is the Salem Ditch or Salem Canal and the Staten Power Canal. The Salem Canal was dug in approximately the 1850s and was dug as a means of supplementing water to supply the woolen mills of Salem. And this was done by diverting water from the North Saniam River to Mill Creek. And Mill Creek traditionally dries up and during the summer, and consequently the mills weren't able to operate without the water, and that was the purpose of this. By the way, the city of Staten was platted in 1872. It became a city in 1891. It was incorporated, and it was settled prior to 1872. I'm not sure the exact date. The canal was built through what was to become downtown Staten. The canal was built at the base of a hill and is the natural recipient for most of the surface water that flows from the downtown area of Staten. For the past 150 years, surface water from Staten has flowed into that canal. The canals have had a succession of owners over the past century and are currently owned by the Saniam Water Control District, an organization that did not exist until the mid-1950s. And 100 years after the canal was dug and well after the city of Staten had grown up around it. In the past few years, as the city of Staten has prepared an update of its stormwater master plan, the Water Control District has increasingly become involved in the local land use process in Staten, demanding the city has no right to discharge surface waters that have historically flowed into these canals, and also demanding that the city, at a cost estimated by our engineers to exceed $30 million, to remove its surface water drainage from the canals, and in addition demanding a fee for the continued right to discharge, together with unlimited assumption of liability by the city and its residents. The city has rebuffed these unwarranted demands, and I'm concerned that this legislation is coming about because of that. And we have tried working with the Water Control District, and we continue working with them. Last night we had a work session on the Stormwater Master Plan, which we hope to implement toward the end of May. And our Stormwater Master Plan consultants have recommended that we work with the Water Control District. They've been in all the meetings. They're invited. We know their feeling on it, and we've been working. Under HB 3454, even discharges from municipal surface water systems of long historical standings would be prohibited. The proposed amendment imposes immediate liability and the requirement for written permission and appropriate compensation, all under the exclusive control of the district, even for existing discharges. The city of Staten for many years now has been working with developers, and we require detention basins. And the basic requirement is that no additional water goes into the system that exists prior to development. And that's where the detention basins work in. And we're doing not only detention basins, we're working on cleaning up the water by requiring some type of swales. And as our stormwater master plan is adopted and developed, we're going to see more and more of that. One of the city council's goals is to acquire a 19-acre parcel just so we can do that type of thing. And currently, we've made an offer on another piece of property to build a detention basin. So it's not like we're not aware of the situation. We understand the responsibilities of to our downstream neighbors, not only in quality but in quantity. Anyways, that's pretty much all I have to say. And thank you for listening.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Mayor. Go ahead, Dan.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, Daniel Eisenbeis, League of Oregon Cities. I'll keep my remarks brief. I believe that the mayor has spoken pretty well to the city of Staten's appreciation of some of the issues at hand locally. I would urge opposition of House Bill 3454, and that we believe that the issues that need to be considered in terms of management of stormwater and canals or drainage ditches are best negotiated at the local level, and as has been mentioned earlier in this hearing, has been done so successfully in other parts of the state. This bill would criminalize long-established circumstances and lead to unnecessary, unproductive, and quite expensive litigation, aside from the non-litigation fiscal impact to local taxpayers in the city of Staten and perhaps other parts of the state. I believe that we should be aiming to facilitate collaborative and cost-effective agreements. One element of the League's work, aside from advocacy here at the legislature, is offering resources to our members. On our website, we offer resources in terms of best practices related to stormwater management. I'd invite any of you to go to orcities.org, click on the A to Z index, and S for stormwater, see what we have available. But also, LOC and the Oregon Water Resources Congress have previously discussed the possibility of convening stakeholders from various parts of the state who have dealt with these sorts of issues to have a conversation about the way that these issues have been handled in other communities so that perhaps we can facilitate some sort of peer-to-peer idea sharing. I know that Mayor Abood has indicated that he would be amenable to such a conversation, and I would ask the committee to provide some sort of affirmation that that is perhaps a better way to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eisenbeis. Any questions? What is the solution for folks in the Sanium Water Control District who, in their view, are now the recipients of water that may be, you know, impure enough to jeopardize their lack of permitting requirements? You know, if they've got, you know, dirty water in the ditch, what's the answer?
Well, the first answer is to measure the quality of the quality of the water, and part of our stormwater master plan is doing that. We have done that, and we've determined that it's not a problem. We have not done a lot of it. We've just done some of it. The Water Control District has disagreed with some of the findings that we've had, and part of our master plan is to set up measuring stations for the quality of the water that goes in, and it actually is actually in the canal. And as far as the amounts go, we're trying to do this for the detention basin system. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, I think it's a partial answer. It makes sense to know what we're dealing with, and I think that's what you're saying. Measure so we have the data about what's going in. And I think that would be very helpful. But Mr. Eisenbeis, do you have anything?
Well, I would just offer that I believe that the legislature should be very careful in establishing new laws, especially ones as far-reaching as this, in speculation of what may occur in the future in terms of permitting requirements, that sort of thing.
And while most of the issue seems to be with the Salem ditch, part of the issue is with the Staten ditch, which, by the way, the Water Control District delivers water to the city of Staten for our water consumption. So even though we don't impact that ditch much, it's obviously interest. We're interested in that. We don't want to be drinking bad water.
Thank you both for your testimony. And I just go back to what I said earlier. I do hope that the parties involved in this situation will find a way to work through it voluntarily without amending state law that may have significant unintended consequences. I appreciate the offer of the league to help sort of convene that process. Granted, though, it sounds like, you know, the two groups here have been at it for a while on this issue and have not reached any sort of found any sort of common ground. So with that in mind, I would suggest that this is a topic we may want to revisit in June after this policy committee has closed its sort of formal work on taking action on policy bills, but we'll still be in the building, and we might hear a report back from Sandingham and Staten and see what the status of the situation is. And if we're still unsatisfied that that progress has been made, then think about putting a work group together to see whether a change in state statute is advisable to deal with this issue. So thank you very much for being here today, and hope we can move forward without a bill, but knowing that we'll have the opportunity to come back and begin our interim work later in this session.
Right. Well, thank you for your observations.
Thank you. Committee members, and we are scheduled to meet on Thursday at 3, and we will be planning to conclude that meeting at 6. So we will not be doing the 6 to 8 evening session. Instead, we're going to try to do a 3 to 6. I hope that saves us evening time, and that's the plan. We'll send an email that confirms that. Representative Gilliam.
I think Representative Bailey wanted to go till 8.
No. I was looking forward to spending the evening with Representative Gilliam. I'm really disappointed. Bring wine and candles.
You got to gamble, huh?
Oh, and with that, close.